Let's take a step back in time. 10, 20, 30 years. The time is different for everyone, but the destination is the same. It's Saturday morning. You're watching cartoons, and things are about to get weird. Welcome to Fetish Fuel. When I say now, you will be a chicken for 10 seconds. Now. Fetish Fuel, Episode 1, Hypnosis. Welcome to the premiere episode of Fetish Fuel. On this podcast series, I plan to talk about cartoons and the concepts in them that evolved into bizarre fetishes as adults. In this first episode, I have special guest Bill, also known as Mercator.
Hi there, I'm Bill. I am a freelance illustrator, furry, cartoonist. And yes, my Twitter @s are @Mercator, and my more general one is @BillCatter. Pretty much spelled just like it sounds. Mercator, Murcatter. And I'm here today to talk about hypnosis and mind control as a fetish.
It is wonderful to have you here with me, Bill. Obviously, I've been following your work for absolute years, and hypnosis is quite a big genre within it.
Yeah, oh, shucks. And I've been following your work as well. It's very good.
So outside of hypnosis, what other things are you into?
Oh, you know, just an average person, kind of into making spaghetti and pastas and all that kind of thing. Scrabble, occasionally. You know, ever since I got vaccinated, going outside has been nice. wow, I did not think of this. I like karaoke. I like certain episodes of Columbo. I'm actually a very boring person now that I think of it.
Just as a disclaimer, before we dive into this, we are not here to specifically sexualize cartoons. We're talking about it from an adult point and acknowledging the effects that these concepts have had on us from our youth and how that affects us now. How would you say, like, we're not trying to sexualize cartoons?
The point is not to sexualize cartoons, but rather to talk about how media influences somebody over time, because I think that this is all fodder for things that come much later. Like, when you're kind of growing up and you're, like, learning to understand things in the world and, like, trying to, like, conceptualize things, these sort of, like, cartoon images are ways of, like, having a, well, if I'm going to be, like, very psychobabble about it, it's kind of like Donald Winnicott and his idea of the transitional object, which is, like, a stuffed animal. It's the me that isn't me. And so when cartoons, they do these things, it's sort of like a way of, like, seeing yourself as something else. And that way, it's like, that kind of does sort of get in deep when it comes to understanding this kind of thing.
I actually feel very late to this podcast game because everyone was starting podcasts during the various lockdowns around the planet. I am starting just as we're coming out of it over here in the UK.
Right. And honestly, I think that's probably good, just like, it, you know, as far as having a more fresh perspective, perhaps, you know, like being able to kind of think about the world and how it works rather than being sort of like in your own echo chamber room.
I think an echo chamber is a very good analogy right now, because particularly with this theme of fetish, because it's so unique to each person, it can become a bit of an echo chamber because of how you frame these things in your mind and how you feel about fetishes. It can often a conversation just with yourself, and you struggle very much to how to articulate and project these ideas out into the world to explain to other people. It's a bit like trying to explain a dream to someone. It's really interesting to you, but it just gets boring for someone to listen to.
Oh, absolutely. And there's this feeling that you're the only person on the planet who has this particular kind of fetish, because like, if you were fascinated with an idea when you're younger, and then it becomes kind of a fetish when you get to, like, you come of age. I know that was the case for me with the furry fandom, which I think is very much interested in this kind of fetish because of just its sort of relationship to thinking of oneself in an avatar, thinking of themselves like one removed, so to speak, like, especially with cartoon animals, like the whole cartoon idea. I think kind of enters into this place that is a little bit safer than just thinking of ourselves as just like fully realized sexual humans who are going out and you know, getting drinks and just like, hey, let us have intercourse. Great. But rather, fetish is this kind of space where it's like, you can have that sort of energy and that sort of like, you know, fun, I suppose, with without all of the sort of hang-ups that years and years and years of just, you know, heteronormative, you know, copulation rituals have kind of taught us to think about things. Certainly.
Well, definitely through my evolution of connecting with fetish, and as a fetishist myself, I've really disconnected from the idea of traditional romantic interaction in that way. Like, as a gay man, it's of course very normal to expect people to want to have sex and fuck and blowjobs and all that, but I'm very disconnected from all that, and I do blame cartoons for it.
Yep, that's you know, I think it is like learning how to draw cartoons, even, right? Like, I'm sure that you probably started this when you were fairly young, and like I did too. And you're just in class and you're just drawing these cartoons and just like, well, I'm not really good at sports or things and everything like that, but I will always have this thing. And so it becomes this kind of like faithful thing to you, like this sort of like partner that you have, your ability to draw these cartoons. And it becomes itself fetishized, this idea of just like spending all of your time like doing cartoons and drawing and comics and all that kind of thing, expressing yourself in this particular way, this mother tongue. Only to like later on be like, oh, now I need to like think about like dating and things and like, how do I go about this? And it gets a little bit more, I suppose, hamstrung.
The curse of being an artist.
Yeah, I suppose that is the sort of bugaboo of the Western canon. Sure.
Yeah, let's dive right in then and talk about some cartoons. Are you ready to open up this TV guide on your life?
Oh, absolutely. I've sort of post-noted some pages that have been particularly interesting.
When you think about hypnosis as a topic, what are some of like the main memories that shoot right into your brain?
I think everybody I talk to, I mean, especially the furry fandom, and honestly, I think that a lot of people were really struck by, of course, Disney's The Jungle Book and Ka, the snake.
I see many fetish accounts which are obsessed with purely Carr.
Exactly. I mean, he is the hypnotist. I mean, like, he's the sort of... Disney wrote a song about... a hypnosis song, you know, and around this story about a child in the jungle, and it's just like, wow, everything about this is unsavory, but everything about this is like... You don't have your guards up against this thing, and it just kind of gets in your ear, and it's just sort of like, that's gonna linger with me for a while. Goodness. And in fact, the fact that it is a song is just like, yeah, that's not even fair. But anyway, I think that does kind of come first as far as like a thing. But of course, that trope is not unique to like just that movie. It just seems like, by the time we get to the 90s, it becomes like par for the course to have a hypno thing. Wouldn't you reckon that that's true?
Well, yeah, I've spoken to you before. Instead of going to PornTube, I go to TVTropes.org.
Absolutely. Goodness gracious. Because there's this idea of like we all have these like sort of New Yorker cartoon ideas about things, like the idea of like going to a therapist office is sort of like something that you might have seen in a New Yorker cartoon, like a single panel comic. And this sort of idea of like different sort of larger concepts we saw through like these cartoons aimed at children. But like mind control tropes were like huge. I mean, like there was like a whole sort of like cult around a soft drink in an episode of Rescue Rangers from Disney. Do you know the show Angry Beavers?
I do.
Angry Beavers. It was around in the mid-90s. I can't remember.
I think that was a Nickelodeon cartoon.
It was. I would say 1998, there was an episode, season 2, episode 11. It was on Nickelodeon, and it was about pond scum. And pond scum was just this sort of like pond, like, blob thing. I think now it'd be kind of considered like slime fetish, which is a thing, especially in the furry fandom. And it basically gets into Norbert's brain and makes him into sort of like this little like biker greaser guy, which is funny because clearly the episode is written in such a way where they want to use this as an episode to talk about, like, hanging out with the wrong crowd. And it's just like, oh no, kids are getting, you know, activated. They're getting, you know, turned bad because they're hanging out with the wrong crowd. And in this case, it was hanging around with Pong Scum. But in this sort of episode, clearly the Pong Scum is getting inside of his brain and controlling him. And then that's like, oh, I'm going to be thinking about that for a while. Excellent. But of course, this wasn't just like the 90s. This was also like in the 80s and also the 70s, as it turns out. There's a show called Yogi's Gang from 1973. Have you heard of this thing? Do you remember any of these sort of Yogi Does a Thing episodes from like way, way back? I don't know if you ever saw these things on repeat.
I don't, but as I'm English and you're American, we probably have very different TV experiences.
This is very true, and certainly I'll just say quickly, the Yogi's Gang was like Yogi's Olympics, Fun Olympics, and then there was the Treasure Hunt episodes, and they were all like with these sort of like basic moral behind them. But in this Yogi's Gang episode, it's called The Sheik of Selfishness, and not exactly politically correct, but they use a turban. And if you wear the turban, it makes you, like, really selfish. And it's very low-key, kind of like mind control, but the whole idea of personality change is a very large trope within the sort of genre hypnosis and mind control. And that one where it's, like, a subtle change and there's not really anything that you would see as far as, like, hypno tropes, like the sort of swirly eyes or, like, the little sparkles around the face, like that one episode of Scooby-Doo would have with the clown with the coin of gold. And just, like, it's hypnotizing. And the animation was so bad that you have, like, essentially just little sparkles around a normal face so that it just looks like they're hypnotized, but it doesn't really look like much.
But it's absolutely astonishing how those tiny little things really impact how we react to these things now. Because, I mean, like, I can throw some spirals onto a drawing and people are like, that's hypnosis, I'm horny for that. And it doesn't particularly matter what the rest of the plot going on is. As soon as they see those spirals, they're just like triggered by it.
Why do you think that is?
It's just symbolism and how we connect with it.
Sure.
To talk about triggers and tropes and whatnot. For me, the thing that really stuck with me from the car experience was that ding moment where he's trying to resist looking into the eyes, and then when he does, there's like that ding sound effect and just a big grin on his face.
Bagheera like doing that face and everything like that, especially when Bagheera is very eloquent. He's very sort of like regal and like very no-nonsense, has a very much like that kind of bearing. And so to go from that to dopey smile is incredibly pleasing, absolutely. And when you change something that's very subtle about something, just to like the hypnosis kind of thing, I know that that's nice because it's something that's kind of off, something that's kind of awry. And I think that that is enough to make it like really appealing as far as a concept goes. I think that that's a big thing about this particular fetish is that you can get sort of a reaction from watching a cartoon beaver that is sort of designed to look like a sort of like a pizza pocket with a little triangle coming out of its face. And then that if that thing can emote this idea well, then it's doing something, I think, that is a little bit more atavistic and kind of deeper seated. That is the nature of this fetish, definitely.
But that's also just the nature of cartoons in general. It's so wonderful to create these two-dimensional characters that have so much emotive power when you just throw in these little bits and pieces of symbolism here and there that you know what you're looking at. It's why I adore cartoons more myself than live action media, just because there's more of an enhanced quality to a cartoon with trying to get that concept mm-hmm. just right.
And there's projection. I mean, it's a lot easier to project onto a cartoon, especially a cartoon animal, in many cases, than it is to project onto, like, I don't even know, Sean Connery. What's even like a live action movie that has hypnosis in it? The Manchurian Candidate. Duh, Jesus. That is...
I don't know what that is. Could you please elaborate?
It's famous enough that I haven't seen it, but I know the plot. And I will say that essentially somebody is sort of like brainwashed into responding to a trigger word. And then when they actually respond to that trigger word, they will basically kill the person that is like the mark. And it's parodied in Zoolander with Will Ferrell's...
The whole sleeper agent concept.
Yes, the sleeper agent, exactly. Much better put. Maybe there's earlier ones. I could have done more research on this, to be honest. But like when it comes to live action things, it's true that I have not really delved too far into it. But yeah, it's like that kind of sort of activation word is becomes a thing. And that's not specifically, I guess it's a little hypnosis-y. And I would like to take this moment to maybe clarify what I mean to anybody in the audience. Hypnosis is sort of like a trance-like state that is induced, and it doesn't necessarily have to do with affecting much other than putting yourself under. When people say that someone is being put under when it comes to this particular fetish or the ideas behind it, that's what they mean. It's sort of like a sleep-like state of being. So you're highly suggestible. So in this case, somebody would like use a pocket watch, a pendulum of some sort, or like maybe a smell, or like just something that is very rhythmic in order to induce this state and to then suggest things. Mind control is much more cartoony, and this is my kind of, this tends to be the drug of choice of mine. I really enjoy the whole idea of like a large cap that you put on a character's head that looks like a colander with a bunch of light bulbs kind of coming out of it. And that turns into like a thing, or any kind of hat that changes your personality, which for a weirdly large number of cartoons I've seen use this idea that if you put on a hat, you become what the hat represents.
Bugs's Bonnets was the episode of Looney Tunes where there was this truck just going along on a road, and then suddenly a bunch of hats fly out the back of it, and Elmer and Bugs come across these hats, and the episode just follows them putting on these hats and completely changing their personalities.
That is exactly, yeah, like that kind of thing. There was a Care Bears movie, I can't remember which one, but there was like a bunch of flowers that were growing different hats, and the hats would fall on people, and then they'd act like the hats. And like, I think it's always framed by the animators as some sort of like, oh, look at this silly chicanery. Look at these jolly japes that are happening here, and just like how wonderful this is. And then later on, people, you know, like in certain fandoms are just like taking notes. I know for myself, I'm an individual who is incredibly neurotic and very stressed by my own dumb brain sometimes. And so the fact that I overthink things, it's sometimes really refreshing to have this idea of like, aha, but what if I don't have to think about these things? What if I turn instead into some sort of like gigantic himbo who is just lurking around a gym? Or it could be, like I said, literally anything, like a rodeo clown. Or it could be leather daddies are good just because it's like nice costumes, but of course it's really hot right now and everything like that, so I feel like something more scantily clad would probably be preferable.
The thing I specifically enjoy about that is just the fetishization of taking a mental break from yourself and being forced to follow the script of these stereotypes.
Yeah.
I mean, a very popular thing when it comes to hypnosis is the whole idea of, you're going to be hypnotized into a dumb jock, which is obviously even with high school characterization of what a jock is, they're meant to be dumb and buff and quite a very big, much of a bully. But obviously we know in real life that muscular people are actually quite smart because they have to put so much effort into building the body they have.
Yeah, I mean,
but we enjoy fetishizing it to that base level of, oh, this is a cartoon. It is such a huge genre, and particularly in my line of work, a very popular thing amongst rubber fetishists is, of course, the idea of being turned into just a simple slave drone, which, when you list all the possibilities of what hypnosis can do, it's so boring.
I don't know. I mean, I think you're doing yourself a disservice there. The slave drone, it's a classic for a reason. It's like, okay, you're this person with all of your vicissitudes, things that make you so, you know, uniquely you.
What a fabulous word. What does that mean?
I'm going to have to look up this word now. You're putting me on the spot. I just use words. I don't have to know what they mean. I believe I'm using the word wrong because it means a change of circumstances of fortunes, typically one that is unwelcome or unpleasant. So I'm definitely misusing that term, but I guess you could use the term.
Well, I don't know. It depends if you've been hypnotized or not.
Oh, no. But a vicissitude, a change of circumstance or fortune, typically one that is unwelcome or unpleasant, that does sound like hypnofetish, so it's probably welcome here as a word. People who have their own uniqueness about them, the very particular whatness that makes them them, this sort of, identity that they have, that's this heavy thing. If they could exchange that for the sleek, shiny toy, the sort of the droneness of just like basically being this sort of like very useful object person. And that's, I think, the appealing thing. Whenever I talk to people into hypnofetish, the people who are not interested in being induced into this kind of state, but rather the kind of people who want to do this to somebody else, like want to subject other people, that's a different thing entirely.
Absolutely. With hypnosis, it is completely a power exchange fantasy of the hypnotist and the hypnoee.
Yeah, I mean, certainly. That change in the person, the subject, the object of that, you know, like, is so much more interesting than, like, I am Professor Brain and I have a ray gun. I'm going to point it at the person. They're going to cluck like a chicken. I mean, like, that's fine. That's good. But I'm much more interested in the person becoming the chicken.
Well, just there, that's another avenue to go down. There are so many tropes of hypnosis in terms of how one can be hypnotized.
Of course, there's the classic with the pendulum, usually a pocket watch. I think when people think of hypnosis, immediately their brain goes to pocket watch. Perhaps maybe a crystal or a pendant, depending on like the kind of tradition, but...
It really depends on how far your budget stretches.
Very good point. It's like, oh yes, look at the penny on the string. I couldn't go to the bank. Just like, I couldn't get a bigger coin, or nor do I have an actual timepiece.
But that links straight back to the Scooby-Doo thing you mentioned Indeed. Earlier with the coin of gold, which had a fabulous phrase, which was, watch the pretty coin of gold and you will do as you're
yes,
told.
Yes, exactly.
And right there you have the trigger of a phrase which you'll fall under anytime you hear it.
A rhyme or mantra, definitely. It's a very powerful, effective thing. And that is anything that can just stick in your brain becomes immediately more fucky, in my opinion. Repetition of anything. Like, there's an episode of Cat Dog where the dog gets put through obedience training and just becomes like a mindlessly good dog and then just can only say, good day, in just like this sort of very polite and pleasant way.
I have not seen that episode, so I'm going to have to look that up after all this, because that sounds like my jam.
Sure, I mean, absolutely. I mean, honestly, a lot of those Nicktoons, just were, like, they're trying to see how many fetishes they can just, like, I think that over the course of this program, you should just, like, keep a tally of the different shows that have been, like, referenced by various types of people, and just, like, see which one's, like, the winner, which show, like, basically has the most fetish-packed, you know, ness of it, like, you know, like, is... for your money, the best place to get all your fetishes.
Well, I'm expecting by the end of this entire project to have a bingo card of just like, what episode are you expecting to see from this cartoon from 1996?
Sometimes they will involve like a magician coming to town. Like, I'm pretty sure there was like a Garfield and Friends episode or something where like John is like insisting like, oh no, I can't be hypnotized. I'd never be hypnotized. And the hypnotist will just snap his fingers and all of a sudden under.
That is one of my favorite plot lines, though. Just someone insisting they can't, and then that snap of the fingers, and they're just, they're
gone. Which I think largely is a lot of the appeal for a lot of people, is that sort of like, whatever sort of like insistence that I'm above this or beyond this, and then being proven wrong, it's a way of like taking away control. It's like even that whole like, no, please, I'm really too serious and too important of a person or yada yada. And all those pressures societally that are put upon you, that you put upon yourself. So basically it's a relief almost just to be like released from them for like whatever amount of time you're under.
Carrying on with the different ways you can be hypnotized, I'm just looking at my list here. Me and Bill both wrote lists of as many cartoons as we could think of that had hypnosis in them. At the top of mine is Aladdin and Jafar's Staff. I actually rewatched Aladdin last week, and it was so camp. Like the Disney Aladdin, the cartoon one, not the live action one. Jafar was saying to the Sultan that he should let him marry Jasmine. And obviously the Sultan was all like, oh no, you're far too old. But like he was getting right up in his face with his staff being like, no, you will do this. And it wasn't subtle acting. It was so camp and draggy. It was wonderful. And we don't actually have that kind of villainy going on in cartoons anymore because it's become a lot more nuanced. And it was so refreshing to watch this thing from the 90s and just be like, oh my god, that is a villain, that is panto, that's wonderful.
Exactly, like the whole idea of just like, it is really high melodrama, or it's like camp, super camp, and that's wonderful. And that reminds me of the fact that like Disney, yeah, it like if you have a snake, the snake can do a hypnosis even if that snake is a staff. Like that's essentially the message, because of course Robin Hood also has Sir Hiss who does the hypnosis on... the king, and you're just kind of like, why is this here? Like, is this here just because you had, like, your rotoscoping old, you know, animation from the Jungle Book, and so you're like also reusing Hypno, you know, Ka in order for Sir Hiss or whatever. And I'm just like, but it doesn't even make sense in the story, really. Like other than just like it's kind of, you know, hot to see, you know, a lion who's sucking his thumb being hypnotized, you know. But anywho. Other methods, certainly screens. I think screens are a big one.
Recently in The Incredibles 2, for example, with Screenslaver, that one really took me by surprise. I wasn't expecting to see that in the cinema. To do that whole thing of supervillain plots, on my list here as well, I've got the Power Ranger movie.
Oh, sure.
The one which had Ivan Ooze in it, and there was this pot of purple ooze that he was selling to children to take home, and the parents would then touch the ooze, and then they turn into mindless zombies. Have you ever seen it?
I have not. That's really interesting.
The thing I particularly remember about it was the really cheap special effects, because as the parent of like the main character of the film touched this ooze, there was that whole like Jedi lightning through the ooze, you know, like the hand-drawn lightning effect.
Oh, yeah. Always a good one.
To obviously show that the person had been hypnotized and then his eyes glowed and then he just like walked out looking stupid.
Yeah, that does seem to be like dead face, I think, seems to be the popular sort of depiction of like, you know what I mean? Like where it's like the face betrays no reaction, no emotion, usually very robotic. And it's always funny to see this in like when it's being parodied, like The Simpsons has that episode where Lisa is trying to get everyone to recycle, and it turns out that Mr. Burns is using the recycling plant to kill a bunch of animals, and then he's like, no, I gotta get everyone to stop recycling, and then like a woman just kind of like looks at her robotically and says, but you told us to, Lisa, we're doing what you said, and just like that's kind of the parody of like this kind of a trope that's being used. But I mean, that's and I'm sure that goes back to like a lot of you know, like old film and that whole idea of like, oh my goodness, how could we even forget? Like, if we're going to be talking about live action, Nosferatu, any kind of vampire film, like vampires having that sort of like, you know, like that call to the person and just like, yes, let me bite you now. And just like, and they're like, okay. And they just kind of walk like sort of just like slowly towards them, arms outstretched, which arms outstretched is such a good trope. Oh my goodness.
Oh yeah. I've wrote that down on my list as just zombie arms. And I feel like it's so underused in fetish art.
Oh, yeah. I try to use it as much as possible, partly because my boyfriend's really into it, and partly because I just think it's just a very good thing to do. It immediately conveys, like, I'm zombie. Hello. And just and you can do a lot with it. And, it, like, especially if the... yeah, I mean, like, let's say you're having the character walk a trapeze, because then that's a sort of, like, danger element, and they don't know enough to not know that this is super dangerous. And so that's, you know, like, that's a fun thing. And then, like, the arms just kind of, like, out there, just like, yep, back and forth, step, 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 you know, just that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. For me, a lot of my fetishes, I can definitely pencil back to Looney Tunes. And with Hypnosis, I have a few examples actually written down. There was this one episode of Looney Tunes, which had Sylvester and Tweety. Mm-hmm. And Sylvester picks up a book, which is like how to hypnotize, because he's trying to get to Tweety, who is on a really tall birdhouse surrounded by dogs.
Yeah.
I don't know if you remember this episode.
I do, actually. And
so he learns how to hypnotize so he can walk through, and he like, it's not a spoken word thing, because Looney Tunes very often was physical humor over spoken, and he just walks in and just looks at dogs straight in the eye and freezes them. And I love that idea of just a hypno stare.
It's the instant freeze, the sort of snap action that, you know, like immediately, boom, they're hypnotized, boom, they're enthralled or whatever. That's always fun to see. It's a great visual, especially if their spine stiffens, their whole body becomes kind of like a piece of plank.
Let's take a quick break right there, and we'll be right back after these messages.
Looking to win friends and influence people? Or maybe take over the world? Are you tired of people just not doing what you want them to do? New from the Acme Corporation, the Vibramatic Hypnoblaster. Simply point it at your target, pull the trigger, and there'll be putty in your hands. Order today and always get your way the easy way.
Hypnosis is all about the fetishization of a change of mental state. Whether that be being frozen into a trance or having your mind forcibly transformed in some way. How would you summarize hypnosis yourself, Bill?
I think you did it very well there. I would say hypnosis is moving from a state of maybe too much awareness to one of less awareness, to one that is basically simplifying every single individuated aspect of thought into like a single desire or a thrust, a function, which is why you often see like drone transformations being of this kind. Sometimes it's, you know, transformation into another personality, but usually that personality is also kind of cartoony and caricature. So like, take somebody who's very humble to somebody who's a kind of a complete braggart and just like is constantly into their own, sort of brand. And then that's kind of an interesting sort of transformation that, basically takes that principle. You went from basically being overly self-aware to like, being self-obsessed, which is like a lack of awareness, I'd say. I've seen this a few times, but where it's like, instead of like it being like, you're a dumb bastard or you're, you know, going to suck so much cock now, somebody will just like pull in and do one that's like, you will believe in yourself today and just like make a wholesome, like a mind control thing. It's like, yes, I will take myself seriously when I go to the job interview and just like that kind of thing. Or yes, I will say something nice to myself after I didn't do exactly what I wanted to do today.
Well, right, there is another thing I've got written on my list, which is the hypnosis tape whilst you sleep, which the biggest example I have for that is the episode of Friends where Chandler is listening to one accidentally, which is about being a strong, confident woman, where it's meant to stop him from smoking. And I'm such a fan of that specific trope of being unaware of what you're listening to, but also you chose to do it.
Oh, yeah. No, definitely. That's ideal for me. That, like, because a lot of people will say, like, whenever I get a commission or something that's, like, of this kind, a lot of people will, like, put so much energy into, like, the hypnotist. I'm like, ooh, no, don't do that. No. Now, please just let it be, like, an object that the person finds or, like, a book they decide, like, well, I couldn't possibly open the box that says this box will make me instantly into blah. It's just, like, and then the person does open the box. And so, of course, listening to a tape is very much that. Like, oh, this will be fun. I'll just listen to this thing while I sleep and it's not going to really work, but it might be fun. And then they do it and they become the thing and that's really horny. Or in the case of, like, you know, like it could be also very funny, like in Dexter's Laboratory, when, of course, you know, he listens to a learned French in your sleep. And then the only thing he learns is omelette du fromage, which is a French, like, or sorry, an egg, cheese omelette. There you go. He gets really in with the ladies and apparently they all are really impressed by omelette du fromage. And then he can't open his lab because the password is Star Wars. And
just for me, could you put your lips against your microphone and just give me the most ASMR-orific omelette du fromage you could?
Omelette du fromage.
Ooh, I got tingles.
I can't speak French. Anyway, that or like a hair care product and like anything kind of thing that can seep into your brain through osmosis is another thing I really like hair gel. Like, I think there's an episode of The Simpsons where it was a Halloween, like, horror, the Treehouse of Horror. And the hair, it has the ghost of the you know, the robber character.
Snake.
Snake, thank you. So Snake's hair is, like, is the sort of impetus there. And it turns, like, Homer's like, oh, great, I get a whole head, full hair to hair. But then it's cursed and, like, the hair kind of grows into his brain and takes him over. And then he becomes Snake. That's horny. That's horny. Or, like, anytime you'll see, like, media where you, like, have, like, some sort of hair gel or, like, the change of the hairstyle essentially changes the character, because that's really just an axiom from, like, live theater. It's like, if you can change the head, that's changing the character. Like, mm-hmm. You just basically give them a distinct hairstyle or hat, and that becomes the thing that you can see from the very back row, and that makes that character distinct from other characters.
Well, a specific theme which I'm horny for in that family, which is adjacent to hypnosis but related to this conversation, is the Jekyll and Hyde effect.
Ooh, yes.
Where you're actually aware that you're behaving different when you have that different hair, and when you don't, you're yourself, but it's to the point that you have split personalities, and like, I'm aroused by that idea of fighting with yourself.
I mean, yeah, very much that, yeah, sure, absolutely. Jekyll and Hyde is definitely a big one, because it becomes more like an addiction, and it's like you're fighting that sort of desire for this thing. It's like, oh no, this hurts everybody around me because I'm a mean asshole or something like that when I'm this way, or I could be putting other people into danger, but like, it feels so good to do. And then that becomes the sort of like language of addiction, which of course, a lot of these things, when you talk about them IRL and talk about them in real life, this is why I think this is also a fetish which gets a lot of people angry, and a lot of people are like, this is so problematic, how can you be into this thing? Because what you're doing is taking a concept that is basically seems to be trivializing something that happens IRL, but not really. It's rather like you're trying to process like harder things in your life. You're trying to process things that are like, you know, a little bit more complicated perhaps, and like and you're wrestling with. And so by putting them into a fetish form, it's like you're able to kind of enjoy something while at the same time releasing some anxiety about that thing. But yeah, I think that Jekyll and Hyding is also cartoony and removed enough from that kind of conversation that it's a lot more camp and fun than just talking about like something that might be addiction.
Well, in terms of those topics, I've got an example written down, which I don't think you will have had over in the USA, but here in the UK, we have this book series called The Demon Headmaster.
Oh, wow.
And there was a TV series based off of it, and it was all about this headmaster who had the power of hypnosis. And within his school, he was actually brainwashing students to be like part of his own personal army, but it was also a bit like the preppization of it. Like making them very preppy, well-behaved, and totally obedient.
Like, definitely, like, neat and clean or something like that. Like, don't stick out. Don't be, like, a thing in society. And, like, especially for a queer folk, I mean, like, you know, who are fitting into this sort of world and everything like that. Or, like, you know, sometimes are dressing in a way where it's just, like, you know, like, not necessarily dressing the way that they might want to dress or something if they're in the closet. Or if they're out of the closet and they're loud, and like there's a lot of anxiety about that kind of thing. And so like even though you're living your truth, then a lot of the time when you have like a fetish that involves like wearing, I don't know, a tucked in polo shirt with khakis, like I mean that becomes a fetishized thing because it is sort of kind of running counter to other inner desires. And so that is another sort of like expression of that fetish, I think.
Well, in terms of the whole fetish of you are what you wear, that's what the whole fetish community is based on. You dress as a leather man, you should be behaving this way. You dress scally in sportswear, you should be behaving this way. And the list goes on, but there's expectations that you should be behaving a certain way when you dress a certain way to get the reactions you want.
Absolutely, and I think it works really well in a fetish, and very much it is a very rote thing, like a 1, 2, 3, like I put on the maid uniform, so I'm going to do some cleaning. but certainly, I mean, like, there's also, like, how does that reflect against the culture that we live in?
Well, we live in a very strange time at the moment in terms of gender norms and, like, what you're allowed to be aroused by. And talking just about gender characters is a really interesting topic to come to, because I know that the hyper macho personality is something that people are quite scared by, but we also fetishize the fuck out of it.
Oh yeah, I don't know if that is because like, I mean, if I could be like very basic bitch about this, I could say like a lot of us don't have particularly good relationships with our fathers, and perhaps that's probably why dads are fetishized. But then I don't think that that's a very satisfactory answer. A lot of this stuff isn't particularly politically correct or historically accurate. Because like a lot of ancient Egyptian theming happens, like where it's like, oh no, you're being wrapped in mummy wrap and becoming hypnotized into being this entombed pharaoh or something. And it's just like, well, I mean, of course, it's like just because like the sort of like the costuming is nice, the gold, it's gaudy, it's strange, it's not, you know, what we're used to. And so like that becomes a fetishized thing, even though it does represent like 3,000 years of history that happened in the upper corner of Africa.
I'd probably dub it as the village people effect.
Yeah, definitely.
If you see these characters, you can acknowledge they're problematic.
Yeah.
But you're trying to lend to these things. You're not intentionally trying to be politically disrespectful.
Right. I don't think it's really, like, again, we're both white and having this conversation. But so, like, I mean, like, I don't think we are allowed to, like, really to weigh in on this because we're not the ones being affected. But I will say, like, a historical ancient Egyptian is maybe not really speaking to today. But I'm also not going to go out of my way to justify this because I do have to say, like, with a lot of these fetishes, I don't think that people find something hot because it's like they've checked off all the boxes and like, ah, yes, this is perfectly good and, you know, ethically pure. So, like, I'm now going to be attracted to it. No, you're really not in total control over why something is you're attracted to. You only are controlling, like, basically how you respond to it. And I mean, like God forbid, like, and you know, like, there are people that have attractions which are criminal, horrible, and monstrous. That is, you know, like, that's definitely true. Like, because I do think that it's important to, like, address the issue of, like, doesn't some of this kind of read like non-con, like, not like this is a non
non-consensual.
Thank you, non-consensual. Wow, took me way too long to think of that. Non-con, and like it, like things that are like, you know, like rape and everything and all these kind of things, which I know are, you know, like things that people actually have genuine concerns over and everything, and they worry about these things. But also this kind of language was also being bandied about against gay people, that people were saying that gay people were rapists, that they were pederasts, that were all these things. It's disingenuous, basically, to say that this is how all people interact with, like, a fetish, for example. And I'm not necessarily saying that fetish is the same as sexual identity, but I do think that there's a lot of overlap when it comes to, like, how we've processed things, you know, as we were becoming more sexually aware, and what these things kind of represent.
An example of the whole macho persona thing I have is there's this fabulous TV series called Weird Science.
Oh, yeah.
Which was the spin-off from the movie. But yes, so there was this episode where Wyatt, one of the two main guys behind it, starts to wear underwear from his older brother, who is this guy called Chet, who's this big macho bully kind of guy. And whenever he wears these underwear, he takes on the personality of his brother. It's funny because the underwear is this leopard skin thong. I absolutely love this episode because Wyatt is quite a nerdy person. He's that very relatable geek. So seeing him walk around, he's like holding onto his belt, doing that whole the strut, you know, where you keep your legs really wide. He's smoking cigars, just that whole thing. Seeing this really timid guy act like that was such an arousing moment for me, and just becoming so distant from yourself. And that's why it's so easy to fetishize on these macho stereotypes.
Sure, absolutely.
Very rarely do people truly have all those boxes ticked in their real personality.
I mean, it is performance, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, that is the thing. It's like, I think there's maybe a placebo effect with this kind of, like, media, where, like, somebody's wearing something, and the idea is that it makes them confident enough, because partly I think that there's something kind of almost invidious about society, where it basically will say, like, oh, well, most men want to be this man. This is the ideal man, and as long as they're confident enough to do it. So wearing his thong, like this sort of leopard thong, it's like it's a way of, like, saying, I am a leopard, and I'm going to take what's mine, and then just, like, have a swagger. Exactly. Versus this sort of, like, meow kind of, like, attitude that a lot of us have most days. Extreme, I think, is just generally good. Like, but especially if it's, like, a gradual, like, sort of thing, like, where somebody's like, well, maybe I'll wear this thing, or, like, I normally wouldn't do this, but maybe today I'll, and then it just kind of turns into a thing. Like, I did a comic once about, like a lifestyle brand or something. It's like I'm just watching on YouTube and just, like, maybe I'll take a few suggestions from this thing, and then eventually it devolving into changing your personality entirely. And that's sort of, like, little bits and pieces, you know, not all at once. When it comes to, like, a method of transformation, do you have a specific thing that you tend to go to when you're wanting to, you know, just make something random? Like if you're interested in this fetish, what is the first place that you would start as far as, like, a costume, let's say?
As trigger points, I'm with you on the whole colander head visual. I particularly remember the example from Batman Forever, which had Jim Carrey in it as the Riddler.
Mm-hmm.
And they had this helmet, which was basically like a blender attached to a colander. And it was so camp and crap looking, but that's the kind of visual I adore. This DIY science. Something which isn't, like, entirely sleek.
Yeah. Like, certainly when you think of, like, a brain control device, you picture the very clear, like, cartoon, like, imagery of, like, a Dr. Frankenstein laboratory with giant UNIVAC computers, like, in huge boxes on the side of the wall. like this very like outdated, instead of like, it would be very like, I know, like with the example of like the oh goodness, the Incredibles 2, you have a very compact piece of technology and that's kind of satisfying, but it's a lot more satisfying to think of like that all happening in like a giant tube. Like even for Pete's sake, We're Back, the dinosaur movie, which had a whole plot about brain gain cereal and then brain drain, which is like a sort of like thing to return them to these really stupid, you know, dinosaurs as opposed to anthropomorphic talking dinosaurs. And then the sort of like animation that had to do with like the draining of the brain, it was like this whole evil laboratory. It was extremely cartoonish but very effective.
Well, I always jump straight to the cartoonish. You yourself have touched on many visuals which I really do crave, and that's always about seeing inside of a skull. So for example, if you were to shrink a brain, you literally see a brain go from a full-size brain to the size of a peanut. Or you've done another one where like you draw the silhouette of a head and it's like there's a fill line and you can see all the goop just like draining out of it.
Yeah, I mean, when we think of ourselves in cartoon form, or like we identify with this sort of cartoon imagery, it means that there's a transgression of logic, but also just like what can be possible, and thinking about these things in the very sort of like on-off terms, very black and white. And that is very pleasing. And like, so having that sort of like fun with the sort of like what is happening to the brain, you know, like a tentacle monsters like sucking out your brain from one ear to the other, and then you just become this sort of like dumb thing that's functioning without a brain, without like it being like, oh, well, wouldn't the brain stop, or wouldn't this all stop, wouldn't this kill the person? And if like that's like, no. Like, we're not thinking about that. That's not the logic of this thing. Pay no attention to the man behind the curtain. I mean, it's, that's not the logic we're going for here.
Off a brainstorm in my head of, like you said, switch. So I think about a switch on the back of someone's head, which leads me to think about Toy Story 3, where Buzz gets put into Spanish mode.
That is a, yeah, absolutely.
And just like the stupidity of those simple visuals.
Like the phrase bad end is a popular one, especially with folk who are into, vore, for example. But like, and given that caw enthusiast, people who really enjoy this sort of hypnosnake, there's a lot of overlap because the people who are into the hypnosnake are also into the hypnosnake eating them. So that kind of becomes a thing. And it's like, can somebody enjoy this thing in a way that's like ethical or whatever? And it's like, well, no, I mean, like, the bad end has to be a thing that you just kind of, like, have to assume cartoon logic. For example, I tend to use one character more than any other character, and it's a character from my comic strip from back in 2010. His name is Marty. He's a dog, and I basically have done so many different things to him, presumably have willed him out of existence, probably had him vored. He's been sort of, like, transcripted into various types of military program. He's been, I don't know, turned into a himbo several times, turned to jelly one time. Like, I'm sure that everything that could be done to Marty has already happened, and he's still Marty. He's still canonically Marty. He still exists because it's the, what I call the Band-Aid effect. When you see in cartoons, like, a cartoon character that's, like, wrapped in bandages until it's irrelevant, in which case they're fine. Like, you'll see in one panel them got, like, their, like, a big bandage on their head, and then the next panel maybe, or next scene, they no longer have that bandage around their head because they're fine now. So that's mostly how death works in the cartoon world.
Where does the fantasy end and reality has to start setting in? Because obviously, as a fetish artist myself who deals with human characters, I face this flame quite a lot where people do struggle to see my work as fantasy and instead they decide to read it as like a how-to book, which is always a bit jarring to me because it feels like, because I draw human characters, I don't get as much elasticity with the concepts as furry artists do. Because obviously with furry artists, it's obviously a cartoon character and people seem to be able to understand that, that they follow a different rule.
Some really do take like umbrage at it and like are like, oh no, is he going to be okay? It's like, because he wrote him this way. And like, he's a cartoon dog. He talks. He's pretty much like invincible. I couldn't kill him if I tried. He's just willed to existence and now it's out of my hands. I'm like, I'm very death of the author about this.
I mean, if cartoons follow the logic of real people, Scooby-Doo would have died of diabetes about 88 times by now.
But yeah, cartoon characters don't exist in that logic. And yeah, and
so with hypnosis, the biggest lie I've actually ever heard is you're not going to do something unless you want to. When it comes to hypnosis, like anything, you can be convinced to do anything. Hypnosis is just this vehicle which you put things in to pretend like a person's opinion no longer matters about the thing.
Certainly. I do think that when people are saying that quote, they are referring to like IRL hypnosis, which there is an IRL hypnosis. How deeply you trust that. Like, it's true. It seems like on Forensic Files and Unsolved Mysteries in like the 1980s to the 90s, it seems like every cop was getting like somebody's testimony via hypnosis, which seems hella illegal. And kind of fanciful, but I think that when it comes to like, you're not going to divulge anything that you wouldn't be willing to divulge, and however true that is, I don't know, because I think it's a subjective experience, basically, to be able to speak to a lot of people and what they were experiencing when put under.
I totally understand where people can feel triggered when they see things, but particularly within the fetishization of hypnosis, when you make it clear this is fantasy, not reality, you kind of do have to accept that they are two different realms.
Right. So, like, these things do exist, and then there have been situations that have evolved around this kink and where people are conflating this kink with basically bastards being bastards. And I think that that is a little bit missing the forest for the trees. You know, it's a thing that can be used like anything else, in the same way that, like, BDSM culture has had some folk who have done things in the name of that kink, which really was just a bad person in that kink. Because I do think that we should address, like, the fact that the whole, like, there is a non-con element here, like, very much intrinsic to the ideas behind it. And whether or not that's a good thing in fantasy is, I guess, up to every person to decide for themselves. I think it's cathartic. I do think that there's a reason why it has kind of struck a chord with so many people as a way of escaping.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, like, I don't fetishize hypnosis myself in the context of I want to willingly do these things. It's only arousing to me because I'm being forced against my will.
Because, again, I think that goes back to like that sort of wish of wanting control to be taken from you, because you're really tired of having to like control every single aspect of your life, perhaps, on some level. It would be nice to let somebody else drive. Life is exhausting.
A great example I have of the whole enforced against your will thing, which is the most recent Marvel series, WandaVision.
Oh, sure.
Did you watch it at all?
I did. I saw it. I really enjoyed it.
There was this one episode where I feel like the character was called Mort, but he was like an assistant in an office. And so obviously in WandaVision, there was this spell over an entire town and they were all acting as if they were in a TV show, but there was this moment where one of the guys was taken out of that illusion and they were screaming and panicking because they didn't know what was happening. They had no control over their body. And then as soon as the spell went back, they just went back to being a smiling doofus.
Yeah.
And I absolutely fetishized that moment because I'm like, that seems like, obviously from my point of view as someone not involved in the horror, which it actually is, ooh, being forced to obey a script. Hot.
Yeah, I mean, essentially what it is just like, it's the fish coming out of the water and then you throw the fish back in. Except that in this case, it's almost like putting like a fish out of water. It becomes the animal that it is actually. And then you throw it back in the water again, it becomes a fish. And it is that sort of like, the coming out of it is the sort of hot part of it, certainly. And of course, that whole series, you have Deborah Jo Rupp playing the wife on the first episode. And the realization that, you know, they're all characters, like, in retrospect, you know, like, based people who are just going through a script. And she gets stuck. And she says, she keeps saying her husband's name as he's choking. And I think she says, help him, or something. And, like, she keeps repeating it with the same expression on her face because she doesn't know what to say because her script hasn't gotten that far. And so, like...
No, definitely within my work, for example, I draw people being hypnotized into rubber sex dogs all the time. And I do this joke of the only thing a rubber sex dog can say is dog noise.
Yeah.
Like, I've drawn a few comics as well where someone's trying to say something other than dog noise, but they simply can't because that's not what they've been told
sure.
to do.
Absolutely. I mean, like, it becomes an aphasia.
I know that I fetishize that whole coming out of it a lot, and I don't see that often because obviously for a lot of people, the idea is an end point, where I really do enjoy that back and forth of being reminded of the situation you're in.
Indeed, like basically letting the audience know, because like once the transformation is complete, that's dissatisfying. It's all about the journey. And so, you know, you need to keep pushing that back and forth, which I think is really more to the point of why non-con is more interesting than like just completely consensual, because if it's a completely consensual act as far as like a transformation is concerned, then that means that it's a very simple transaction. It's over and done. And that's just not narratively as interesting as like a slight fight.
I mean, just on the topic of being forced into the whole bad ending thing, to use sex dogs as a example, it's the idea of take a CEO working for a company turned into a rubber sex dog because they want to be one. And then they wake up the very next day after their evening of debauchery, and they're still a sex dog, and they have to accept that situation. And like, even though they're acting as a sex dog should, it's that whole concept of inside they don't want it any longer because it was just that fantasy in the moment.
Definitely. I think that the whole, like, the reckoning of something, it becomes kind of more of a, it becomes kind of like a horror story too. I think many of these things, if you just twist it slightly, I mean, like, yes, it's a fetish kind of thing, but it's also, you know, like, and this is why people who don't get the kink are always saying, like, oh, this just sounds like a horror scenario. And yeah, it is. But, like, that sort of thing, like, you're not necessarily supposed to take the logic all the way there. Where the story ends is sort of, like, where you basically place the period will determine whether or not it's a horror story or not.
So my final question for you, as this show is all about fetish fuel, what does fetish fuel taste like?
Ooh, I was not expecting... Let's see, you know, I feel it would have to taste slightly metallic.
Interesting.
But I imagine it would taste a bit like a whiskey sour. Yeah, that or smell like gasoline. I haven't really quite decided.
Well, thank you so much for joining me on this venture.
Well, thank you for having me.
We talked about a lot of stuff there.
A bit, yeah. It's surprisingly a pretty capacious topic.
With cartoons, just like any good story, you need to bask in the concept and give up on the reality of it. Because if you think about something too much, it will fall apart.
That's why you should just not think at all. Just listen to the sound of my voice.
What do you think of my ray gun?
Oh, look at the screen. It has a giant spiral on it and some concentric circles.
Follow the pocket watch.
Take a deep breath.
Thank you for joining us on this episode of Fetish Fuel, hosted by Spacebub Silver. Guest starring Bill Catter, produced by Matt Clark.